Welcome to the Sales Thinker Radio Show, where we pick the brains of sales professionals, managers, and executives who are serving their customers, advancing the state of our art, and exceeding their goals. Sales Thinker Radio is brought to you by Dreamland Interactive in Atlanta, Georgia, building e-reps and solving the prospecting problem. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Todd Youngblood.
Good morning and welcome back to Sales Thinker Radio. I am your host, Todd Schnick, joined as always by my friend and colleague, Todd Youngblood. Good morning, Todd. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great this morning. Never better.
Outstanding. Well, I wanted to just thank you live and on air for the lovely holiday event you hosted just the other day.
Well, I appreciate that. And I don't know if I told you, I went out and bought more beer than I thought we'd need, and folks brought so much additional that I wound up with more than I started with.
Well, that's not a bad way to end
a holiday. So that's kind of a good deal for me, too.
That's a great way to do it. So I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time. I've known this gentleman online for, I'm going to say several years now, but we've never actually spoken until today. So I'm really excited. I want to welcome Charles Green, who is the founder and CEO of Trusted Advisor Associates. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you very much, guys. Well, a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is our pleasure to have you. Before we get into it, Charlie, take a second and just tell us a little bit about you and your background.
Sure. Let's see. Very quickly, I grew up in the Midwest, ended up driving a taxi and going to college in New York City, ended up getting an MBA from Harvard, and then spent 20 years in the management consulting business. Left that in about 1995, and since then, I've written three books and built a business around trust and trusted business relationships. The first book was called The Trusted Advisor. The second one, Trust-Based Selling. That's mostly what I think we'll probably talk about today.
Well, I'm been looking forward to talking about trust and sales. But before we do that, Charlie, real quickly, tell us about Trusted Advisor Associates.
Trusted Advisor Associates is my firm. We focus on helping people become better trusted advisors or build trusting relationships. Our clientele are heavily financial services, professional services. We focus on external relationships and on internal relationships as well.
All right. So, Charlie, so what is, in fact, the connection between trust and sales? Get into that.
Yeah, well, it's always been an intriguing topic to me because you don't think of them in the same word. In fact, when I came out with my second book called Trust-Based Selling, one of my major clients said, if you call it that, we're not going to buy it. We don't want our people thinking about selling. And I decided to call it that anyway, because if you can bridge the gap between what people think of as the negative parts of selling and actually imbue trust into it, you end up with a really powerful approach to sales and business development. I would argue that to be trusted is the killer app, if you will. And it doesn't get any better than that when your client or customer trust you, and when you can actually build trust in the process of selling, everything just works tremendously better.
Charlie, I couldn't agree with you more on the whole just fundamental requirement to have trust. One thing I run into quite a lot, though, is folks that claim to be trustworthy, say that they are trusted by clients,
and
just frankly are not trusted and maybe aren't even all that trustworthy to begin with. How much of that do you see, and how do you advise folks that are in that situation and don't realize it?
Well, I see a fair chunk of it, too. And one thing I started advising people years ago was don't call yourself a trusted advisor. For God's sake, don't put advertising out there. It's like saying, I am the most humble person in the world. It's an oxymoron. It virtually guarantees that people will not doubt you. The three most trust-destroying or the two most trust-destroying words you can say are probably trust me. It's the kind of thing you want people to say about you. It's lovely to have that in testimonials. It's a good thing for people to talk about. I always take care when people introduce me to say, Trusted Advisor Associates, please do not call me the Trusted Advisor. I try very hard not to get called that. And the whole part of trust is focus on the other one. If you flip it into an advertisement for yourself, you have ruined the whole concept and done so publicly.
Charlie, I bet there are people, as Todd suggested, that aren't trustworthy, but I bet there are a lot of people who are actually good people with good intentions, sincere intentions, loving and caring intentions for their customers, but they do things, they say things they publish things that break down trust. Is that a fair question?
Oh yeah, it's totally fair.
What are some of those kinds of behaviors?
Well, I think, you know, it goes to the heart of it. You're absolutely right to point out that most people's intentions are good. I don't know about you two, but I never have any bad intentions at all. You know, and it's remarkable. If you ask people, are you a mean son of a bitch, badly intended? It's remarkable how many people say, no, not me. But it's those other guys out there, you know, all those others. And what happens is we end up falling prey to mostly fear, 1,000 forms of fear. You know, they might think I'm wrong. They might take my money. I might not get the sale. I better hurry and get this thing out there. I better not mention price until all these things that are essentially trying to control situations instead of giving up control and just being open about what is. And that turns out to be the key. It's a little bit of personal courage and getting over this notion that we have to try and control our customers, be in control of the conversation. So, you know, it's a little bit of kind of like being in any sort of relationship. You kind of have to gulp and hold your nose and jump in a little bit.
Charlie, when I use a word like trust, I mean, the whole idea of a person's individual character is the first thing that pops to my head. But when I use the phrase trusted advisor, it's more than that. It's more than a trustworthy character. I got to believe there's a knowledge and credibility component to that as well. How does that play into your definition of trusted advisor?
Well, that's good. Let's make a distinction and a definition here. A real simple distinction that's helpful when people talk about trust. What's the difference between trusting and being trusted? And what we're talking about here is being trusted, but it's worthwhile mentioning the first one. The person doing the trusting is the one taking the risk. And in sales, that's usually our customer. If we want our customers to trust us, we have to recognize first and foremost, they're taking a risk. So we need to not only make it easier for them by being trustworthy, we also have to at some point take a little risk. But let me focus on the trustworthy and the character. We developed in the first book, or borrowed actually and modified, a concept called the trust equation. And it works very nicely. I'd say it describes most of the characteristics of what we think of when we think of a trusted advisor, including a lot of the character that you mentioned. One of them is absolutely credibility, and I mean that to include competence, capabilities, expertise, all that sort of stuff, as well as being believable, direct, and honest. Call that credibility. Next one is reliability, which has to do with your actions. Are you dependable? Are you consistent? Are you predictable? And I would say, do you have integrity? Do you do what you said you would do? Do you keep to your word? The third one, which interestingly turns out to be the most powerful one, is what we provocatively called intimacy. And it basically means, do people feel safe and secure around you? Will they share stuff with you that they might not share readily with other people? If you get involved in a situation with a customer and you think to yourself, gosh, they should have had me in 6 months ago, that's probably the reason why. It didn't occur to them to have you in because they didn't feel that kind of intimacy with you. And then in the denominator of this equation, we got credible plus reliable plus intimate on the top, and one factor in the denominator called self-orientation, which is, who are you in it for? Who are you focused on? Who are you paying attention to? Are you neurotically self-obsessed, in which case your trust goes down? Or are you kind of calm and mature enough to actually focus on the person in front of you, your customer? So if you work those numbers, it turns out to be a provocative way of looking at the total package of trusted advisor, which certainly includes some character, but some other stuff too, as you pointed out.
I want to throw one more word into the mix and get your reaction to it, Charlie. I mean, traditionally, the sales professional was just a very likable fellow, gregarious, right, and a life of the party. How important is that?
Well, it is important. I think the conventional wisdom, as it often is quite right, that we do like to buy from people who like us. There's one distinction, though. You don't have to necessarily be liked to be trusted. And being trusted doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be liked. And you don't necessarily have to like the person, you know, for whom you're a trusted advisor. You have to, much more critical, I think, are you a straight shooter? Can you be trusted to focus on their needs, not yours? Can you be trusted to tell them the truth, basically to be in service to them? It happens that liking people goes on quite a bit with that. I'd say I have maybe half a dozen clients over the years for whom I consider myself a trusted advisor, not much more than that. And I guess, thinking about it, I'm probably friends with about half of them. And I would not use the word friend to describe the other relationships. And that seems to be about right.
All right. Well, we'll be back with Charlie Green after this commercial break.
The Established in 1995, The Proven Method is dedicated to the long-term success of your business by delivering IT solutions that work for you. As our name implies, we have proven and successful methods with results that our customers expect. Knowing what happened and why it happened is no longer adequate. Organizations need to know what is happening now, what is likely to happen next, and what actions should be taken to get optimal results. Our high-performance approach not only addresses these issues, but enables you to stay ahead of your competition. Front leaders in applications development, The Proven Method will be working to meet your business goals. Contact us at provenmethod.com or call 404-238-8473.
All right, and we're back with Charlie Green, founder and CEO of Trusted Advisor Associates. Charlie, just before the break, you were talking about a word that is very important to me in the sales process, and that's intimacy. I think you know Dan Yes. Waldschmidt, who is part of our little tribe, and he and I do a TV show, and we talk a lot about treating your customers and your prospects like human beings.
Absolutely.
And just the very act and the discipline of treating your prospects and frankly your customers as people and opposed to lines in a database, I think goes a long way towards building a trusted relationship. What would you agree with that?
I'd agree and underscore that. I think you and Dan are dead right about that, and I think it's probably the most important and the easiest, interesting way for people to get better at. It's this intimacy, treating people as individuals. It means things like, are you willing to go off script? Are you willing to recognize somebody's facial? You know, if you're in the middle of a talk and they're yawning, stop and say, you could either make a joke, but am I really boring you that much? or you can say, geez, you know, maybe this isn't a good time, or should we get some coffee? But it kind of goes to emotional intelligence. Are you able to be conscious of your own emotions and other people, and are you able to talk about them? And if you sit there like a wooden post thinking that people are going to buy you because you're smart or because your product is great, you miss all of that. And, human beings, we suffer from this delusion over the past couple of centuries or so that we're basically rational, self-maximizing, individual calculating entities. You know, we're not. We're a little bit that, but we're much more individuals, emotional type people. And when someone recognizes that, everything changes. And by the way, that goes for folks who say, I'm a hard-hitting data kind of guy too. You connect with them by saying, hey, I get you. You're a hard-hitting data kind of guy, aren't you? Nudge, nudge. You know, and they get it. It works there too.
Before the break, Charlie, you mentioned sort of in passing the word price. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen, you know, from rookie sales reps to really crusty old seasoned guys that fall back on price too quickly or allow themselves to be pushed into that corner by a customer. Right. Talk a little bit about that whole selling on price issue.
Yeah, it's everybody's big bugbear. And you know, if you think about it, most people listening to this, ask yourself or ask other people around you, how many times have you lost on price? Answer: most of the time, or half the time, or a third, or something. That's what your customers will tell you. Ask how many times you won on price. How many times did your customers say, you know, we bought you because you were the lowest price? I'll bet you just about never. I do that as an exercise, and I've now learned I can depend on the result. People don't buy because of price. Price is an exclusionary factor and the best excuse in the world. But price is simply the leftover. When if there's nothing else to talk about, you'll end up talking about price. We need to talk about it sooner rather than later because it's an emotional obstacle for people, and it's not irrelevant, and you can't be too far out of bounds. You can't be too high. You can't be too low. But the point is, it's a valid topic for discussion. People raise it as objections, and we just need to get more comfortable with it. There are lots of things people can mean when they say, oh, the price is too high, and only one of them is that the price is too high. And we need to be able to have discussions about what's behind that.
Well, with regards to on pricing, talking about it sooner rather than later, how do you initiate that conversation? Because it seems to me it's not in my practice, because Todd and I do our sales in a way very similar to what you're talking about, in terms of we're actually become buddies with these people, and thus it makes it a
right.
fun interaction and a co-creating kind of an interaction. But I bet you a lot of salespeople out there have a lot of anxiety about this. I mean,
absolutely.
How do you broach that? How do you do it sooner rather than later? I think the practice of most probably unseasoned salespeople is to wait. Talk about that.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's nervous-making for all of us. We're kind of holding our breath, you know, when am I going to pop the price thing, and how are they going to react? Are they going to cringe? Am I going to feel horrible? And I think much of the received wisdom says don't put price out there until the customer has seen the perceived value proposition because they don't have anything to relate to it. I just don't buy that anymore, and I've evolved a little routine in my business, which is kind of professional services, and it's very simple. I say, listen, before we go too far and one of us gets embarrassed by being off by a digit or two, let me just check and make sure. I have a feeling this is like, you know, a low five-digit number. Am I wildly off base? Are we in the same ballpark or what? That way, it's okay for the client to say, oh, my God, I thought we were only talking $200. In which case you say, well, I'm glad I raised it now. I was about to look like a total idiot. Let me help you with that. Or more likely, they'll say, yeah, it's about what I figured. We'll get down to details later. But that way you've talked about it. You brought it out there, and suddenly this big, scary, you know, monster under the bed called price is no longer a scary monster under the bed just because you mentioned it. You can get down to the details later.
Todd and I kind of on a regular basis talk about the movie Glengarry, Glenn Ross.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a love-hate relationship. On the
yes.
one hand, I love the movie, but I can still, every time I hear Alec Baldwin do that ABC, right. always be closing, it makes me want to jump through the screen and punch him. What's
right.
your take on this, that whole, again, traditional sales thing to always be closing? What do you think?
Well, I share your feeling. There is an old guy that I know who was a terrific salesman, and I respect him greatly. He went through the Xerox sales training program several decades ago, which was very good, and he is a proponent of ABC, always be closing. But what he means by that is not what you and I or Alec Baldwin means by that. He actually means consistently look for opportunities to help the client make a decision to move things forward. Well, put that way, I can agree with that too. In general, I think most people do not have the subtlety to be able to handle that, and I don't like that phrase. I get rid of it. I always think, you know, always be consulting, always be counseling, always be collaborative, always be helping the client to figure out better things to do, and closing happens naturally. It's like there comes a point when the client looks at you and says, well, let's do something. And you say, yeah, let's do. I think it's right time. It shouldn't be a tactic. It ought to be a natural outgrowth of an ongoing relationship.
The always be closing mantra just kind of makes it seem, all right, now you're shifting into a new phase, the closing phase. Whereas I believe you always are closing because you're always selling, because you're always helping and being consultative
exactly.
and supportive and caring. And it's just a natural progression. But I suspect there are a lot of people that struggle because when they shift into that next phase, they probably don't do it very effectively. And so their persona changes in the minds of their prospects. And they lose that trust factor that they may have been building up so far. How do you work through that?
I completely agree with you. And to me, the answer is don't call it a next phase. You know, call it a relatively – here's how I think of it coming from consulting. And I tell medium-level career consulting people who are all afraid of having to sell after a lifetime of delivery. I say, listen, the only difference between what you do when you're delivering great work for clients and what you do selling is getting paid for it. That's the only difference. You ought to be doing the same thing, delivering value, looking for opportunities, helping the client figure out what needs to be done better. It's just that at some point, unless you're a charitable institution funded by George Soros or something, you need to say, listen, I can't keep doing this without getting paid. So let's talk about the money, which, by the way, is big. You owe me big for this because I'm good. Let's talk about that, and then let's get back to work. And when you think of it that way, it's not a phase. It's like, okay, let's go out to dinner now. Who's got the check? You know, we don't work for free. What's the big deal? Don't think of it as a phase. I think that's what scares people. It shouldn't be a phase. It ought to be a very natural part of an ongoing practice of openly working to help your clients and customers.
Charlie, you've shared several tips and best practices for developing trust. I'm sure you have 100 more things, but I want to take a little bit different spin on it. And that's in the light of how do I develop my trust building skills? I mean, some people are better at it than others naturally, but what kind of things can an individual do just to get better at being able to develop that trusted advisor relationship?
Right, right. It's a good question because, I mean, the answers are dirt simple, but of course they're hard to do. Simple doesn't mean easy. And it's a question I've thought about over the years because I've run seminars and trying to help people to do this. And how do you be impactful? Well, I've come up with a couple that I think rank near the top of the list. I don't know if I have 100, but I got 60 or 70. But let me pull two or three. One of them actually is do your thinking out loud. Get used to, instead of this mindset that says, well, I've got to carefully cogitate or go back to my office and think about it and then send them and say, no, sit there, open your mouth, let them see inside your brain, think out loud what you're thinking. That will get you used to being open, transparent. We're afraid to do that because, you know, we don't like letting people into our minds. But the truth is that makes you much more knowable, credible. You're not hiding anything. So that's one. I guess I've mentioned one other in particular. If you don't know things, you know, and we all go, hubbada, 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 what do I do here? Say you don't know it. There's paradoxically nothing more credibility creating than saying you don't know. You know, who's going to doubt you on that one? Learn to do that, you know, when you don't know. And I'd say go read anything you can on listening. Take all the stuff you can on listening and don't think of it as a skill. Recognize that being listened to is an act of respect. And the sense of being heard is what triggers everything. People don't buy. People don't take advice until they feel that the seller or the advisor has actually listened to them. So it turns out that talking is not the key to selling. Listening is the key to selling.
Wow. Well, Charlie, I hate to say it, but we're out of time. But I got to tell you, Todd, I love this think out loud idea.
You know what? I wrote that down myself.
Well, because what I think you're doing there, Charlie, when you do that, is you're in essence collaborating.
Because
they're going to be able to respond to your thinking out loud, and then you begin to co-create a solution. And then at some point, they're going to say, well, shoot, we've created this really neat thing. Let's do it.
Absolutely,
and they sell themselves almost. So,
totally
anyway,
right.
Brilliant stuff, Charlie. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you? Where can they learn more about Trusted Advisor Associates, and where can they get their hands on all your books?
Well, all the above at our website, which is trustedadvisor.com, one word, trustedadvisor.com.
Charles Green, founder and CEO of Trusted Advisor Associates. It was great to finally connect with you. I really enjoyed this conversation.
A pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Well, on behalf of today's guest, Charlie Green, my co-host, Todd Youngblood, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Sales Thinker Radio. We'll be right back.